And welcome again to Brew Crew Online. I'm Benjamin Orr.
I'm Colin Bennett.
And as you've noted, as we've noted, as the whole world has noted, the Brewers have done nothing, will probably do nothing, and will continue to do nothing up until April of 2013. So, with that, it leaves a lot of speculation. A lot of speculation. The Brewers have announced that they have no interest in veteran arms, which completely rules out Ryan Dempster. So there's really a lot that we don't know what the Brewers are going to do. It's just, okay, we can place, you know, X, Y, and Z in the rotation. We can place X, Y, and Z in the bullpen. But nobody really knows at this point.
Right, and it's, you know, it's hard to say what's actually going to happen at this point. It appears from what the front office is saying now that there's just, that there's just no room on the payroll worth the risk to take a veteran arm at this point. And we saw this coming in the winter meetings, when there was that whole 3-year barrier that no one wanted to get over in the Brewers organization.
Yeah, we all thought of it as, I guess, that really big stone in the way that nobody can really push aside because, you know, Melvin was so adamant on no more 3-year contracts, no more multi-year deals, 2 years and it, that's it. The Brewers have signed some people. They signed Chris Jakubauskas. They signed Burke Badenhop and Travis Webb. None of really who stand out that much. But, you know, in the long run, maybe Jakubauskas can help us. Maybe Burke Badenhop can. At least bullpen-wise.
Burke Badenhop signed to a major league deal. And he is... I think he's going to make a difference in that bullpen. He's got a very low walk rate. Not the highest in terms of strikeouts. But he's a very good manager around the middle of the game in terms of relievers. So I think you're gonna see him make a pretty immediate impact in a good way.
Yeah, because there's so much suspicion, so much void in this bullpen right now that nobody really knows who you place in here, because the guys you do place in there, you can't start taking them out and then putting them in the starting positions, because you do that, you mess up, you know, your flow that you had, because you're throwing guys off of, you know, their internal clock of how to pitch, because, okay, one night they to focus that, okay, I'm coming in the 6th or 7th, the next 5 nights, you know, they wait, and then they start, and then you do it all over again, and it really throws guys off. We were testing that out a little bit with, like, guys like Merck Rogers and Tyler Thornburg, and they seem to do well with that, Rogers in particular, but I think guys like Willie Peralta, though, definitely will be bred into that starter role if we don't get anybody, and by the looks of it, we won't. So after Gallardo, two through five in the rotation is such a, you know, I guess at this point.
Oh, absolutely. And it looks like fans are the only people that are really sold on Marco Estrada being a starter at this point, which is curious to me. Considering how effective he was throughout his time as a starter last season.
Yeah, because so many people got on his case in the fact that he never, you know, won a game for a long time, and then he finally did. And, you know, as we know in baseball, wins really aren't everything if you're a pitcher.
Right.
So, you know, I think Estrada makes a very interesting case to start. But I also like him in the bullpen for, say, if he needed to come in for 2 or maybe even 3 innings. But I think, you know, do or die, you have to make Estrada a starter hands down. I really do. I don't think there's any suspicion that should be there. Because if you don't use Estrada, a guy who primarily started last year along with Mike Fiers, you don't have anybody else.
Right. Right. No, and it appears that Milwaukee is going to be taking that. It appears that he's going to be taking that kind of road where they're going to be going with more
young guys, more prospects, running into that rotation and that pitching, that bullpen rather, than relying on veterans or, you know, well, let's just say it, people that cost money.
Yeah, the whole dumpster thing, looking back at that, because the last of those rumors were about 5 days ago. Ever since then, I haven't heard anything.
Nothing new's happened, at least on the Brewers front.
No, what I have heard with Ryan Dempster, though, is that there were three teams linked to him, the Brewers being one of them, the Royals and the Red Sox being the other two. He turned down an offer from the Red Sox, and the Brewers were actually wanting to sign him, but only for 2 years, which we pretty much knew at this point. But, you know, if there's a crack in the levy there somewhere, if they can come to an agreement on maybe 3 years or maybe 2 years, then, yeah, I think you absolutely have to take him. But, you know, it's one of those things, if the price is right. If the price is right, then, yeah, you take him. If it isn't, then don't, you know, because unlike signing a guy like R.A. Dickey, who you have to trade for, you wouldn't have to give up anything to sign Ryan Dempster besides money and commitment.
Right.
You know, the Brewers could go down the trading road, and not just for R.A. Dickey. I mean, I think one guy that has been out there, in particular with the Brewers' name, was Texas's Derek Holland, who could get some nods our way. You know, the Royals just got James Shields from Tampa Bay, so maybe Tampa Bay is still looking to deal somebody. Maybe Jeremy Hellickson, I don't know. But, I mean, that is a route the Brewers could go down, but then it hits the point, who do you want to give up? And, you know, is this a guy that you think can help the organization in a longer run? Because, like you said, this is a team that Doug Mulvin is really confident in that can build themselves around prospects. And if you want to build yourself around prospects, then that means you're kind of nixing yourself out of ways of making trades.
Right. And I mean, the Brewers right now are focusing, their main focus appears to be slashing that payroll down to about $80 million is where they want to start. That's where they said they want to start the year, which is fine. I don't have a huge issue with that. But as it sits right now, they still have, I mean, they still have money to play with, that they're just not, using. They have about somewhere between 9 and 15 million that they can work off of. So, I mean, there might be a deal in the works somewhere for a reliever or for, a veteran arm to bring into that rotation, but at this point, it seems exceedingly unlikely that it's ever going to happen.
And hypothetically, let me ask you something. And like I said, this is very hypothetical. What if the Brewers were to try and offer Sean Markham something to bring him back? Because now there's really nobody out there, and nobody's offered Sean Markham anything. So you have to wonder, would he be somebody you'd be willing to bring back if you could for less money?
I think personally and from the Brewers' point of view, no. Because they're also looking to build, I mean, they're looking to build a contending team here. And if there's one thing that Sean Markham has proved through his time in Milwaukee, it is that he simply cannot play a pressure game. And I hate to use, you know, generalized statements like that, like, oh, he can't handle pressure and he can't win the big game, because they'll sound just dumb. But, I mean, you look at his record in the postseason and you look at the must-win games that he pitched in. And it wasn't like, you know, Marco Estrada's losses where he put up a quality start and, you know, things just didn't go his way. Sean Markham got lit up again and again and again in games that the Brewers positively needed to win. And I think that's got to be enough to turn off anybody, even for less money.
Yeah, I mean, Markham really never... He had a lot of potential coming from the AL East in particular, from Toronto.
Right.
He had a lot of potential to do really good, and he never fully developed into that type of pitcher. He always hovered around that 3.5, 3.6 ERA, which isn't really that bad. But
right.
When you have, you know, two good starts, and then you give up three or four runs in your next three, I mean, you have some issues there. And that's not what the Brewers need. You know, the Brewers are already having issues with trying to hold those leads. And then you get to a point where you can't even get a lead to hold because your starter's giving up 4 or 5 runs a game. You know, then, yeah, then you need somebody in there who can actually get the job done, like Giovanni Gallardo. But mm-hmm. there's nobody out there like a Giovanni Gallardo except Giovanni Gallardo himself. And if there is, A, he's too much money, and B, you have to trade for him, and it's way too much to trade for him. You know, there are still people that are on this let's trade Corey Hart route. Okay, but for who? Unless it's for, God, I don't know, Matt Cain? Then maybe. As of right now, I don't think trading Corey Hart is the best option, because I actually heard that Matt Gammel was working not only at first base, but he's working at third base and the outfield. So, trade Gammel. He's proving that he has versatility. He's four years younger than Hart. And could go to a team that needs a first baseman or a third baseman or an outfielder or just a versatility guy in general. You know,
the problem with Gammel versus Hart in terms of who's a better trade option is that Gammel really hasn't proved anything.
Well, he hasn't had the time, though, to prove anything.
Right, but look at it from a business perspective. And the problem with Corey Hart is going to be the amount of money that he's making.
Yeah, I mean, not too many people want a $10 million contract out of nowhere.
Well, yeah, that is true. But he also has proven that if maybe he's not worth $10 million, he's certainly worth a lot more money than Gamble is. And he has the stats to back it up. And yes, I mean, Gamel looked okay during the time that he had worked out in first base. Now they're working him out. He's going to get heavy outfield work. He's not playing in the winter leagues. He wasn't ready to play in the Arizona Fall League. There's no evidence of what's happening with Matt Gammel, and no one. I think the Brewers have kind of signed off on we're going to see where he sits in spring training. And it might have, it might have a profound effect, obviously, on Matt Gammel's career, because if he's going to have to split time between, you know, right field and first base and third base, which he's a far better first baseman than he is a third baseman, but it's going to do more to hurt Matt Gammel, making him a jack of all trades and a master of none at this point at his age. It's going to be very difficult for him to find a serious place on a major league team, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there are teams that, you know, if they want to trade for somebody, they're going to want somebody solid. You know, they're going to want somebody at that position and that position only. Gamble can offer that. He can't. But it depends on what you're willing to risk for Gamble.
And no one's going to risk anything serious for a guy like
him. Maybe a back-end prospect, maybe a back-end guy in a rotation. That might be all you get for him. But, you know, it's hard to even try and present Gamble a case when you have Aoki in right, Aramis Ramirez at third, and Corey Hart at first. It's so hard because then you even have the backups to them. You have Logan Schaefer in the outfield. You have Taylor Green in the infield, along with Jeff Bianchi. It's so hard to place Matt Gammel here when you have you already have the starters and then you have the backups to him. So
right. It's
like, where do you place him to try if you want to make something out of him? Because if you trade Hart, okay, yeah, that's $10 million that's gone, but that's also a big portion of that lineup that's gone. Because, yeah, you still have Luke Roy, you still have Braun, you still have Ramirez, and you still have Aoki, but you're missing Corey Hart, though. And to me, that, taking a guy who's been with this team since, I think, what, 2004?
That's almost he's like, now the longest tenured Brewer.
That's almost like a slap in the face. So, I mean, yeah, you could probably get something for Corey Hart pretty decently, you know, but there are a lot of factors that go into it. A, what team, maybe the Dodgers, because God knows how much money they have, is willing to spend that kind of money to get him, and B, give up things to get him. I mean,
right.
For the money he makes, Corey Hart puts up decent numbers, but not that decent enough for at least $10 million. because we talked before about Ricky Weeks and how he makes $11 million and put up barely put up 220, 230. So,
right.
You know, people are going to look at that and say, okay, well, the only, you know, threats that the Brewers have are Braun, Ramirez, and Lucroy. So, you know, I think in a sense, the other players on this team kind of affect everybody in a sense, because you look at team chemistry and things like that, and how well players do with one another and how well players do when somebody's out of the lineup. So maybe they throw that into a factor, because Milwaukee, I've heard, is a very good place to play. Everybody gets along and things like that. So I don't know. I mean, maybe teams will look into that and say, okay, let's trade him for this guy and, you know, move all these chess pieces around. But like I said, I don't know if trading Corey Hart is really the greatest thing in the world Milwaukee could do, at least at this point.
Well, it depends on the avenue that the Brewers are looking to go to. Again, if they're looking to cut costs, you could trade Corey Hart for prospects. They won't be high level prospects probably, but they could be pitching prospects that could come up fairly soon. You might be able to trade him for a veteran arm. It's hard to say if Corey Hart would end up being part of a one-for-one deal. I think he's a little past his prime to be able to do that. I think 3 years ago you trade him one-for-one, and you get a really big value out of him. But now it's hard to say if he would be, you know, a high-talent one-for-one trade. And it doesn't, it looks like they're, from what I understand, the team was interested in moving him for the right price in the winter meetings, and nothing really came up. So at this point, they're just sort of sitting on their heels, which is kind of just the moral of the entire winter meeting story for the Brewers.
Do you have like a cat or something? Because I'm hearing like a lot of, like, I heard like a lot of like scratching or something. I don't know.
Oh no, I don't know what that was. The joys of live recording through laptops.
Oh, it sounded like a cat, but anyway.
Well, I do have cats, but if you heard them in my apartment, they would be because they were knocking something over.
Clumsy cats, I see.
Mm-hmm.
But
clumsy or destructive, and after everything that I love, one of those two things.
Oh man, like my. Totally off topic right now, but I have this cat at my dad's house, and I remember it was a few years ago. My dad was cleaning the entertainment stand where like all the TV and like the Xbox was and stuff like that. And
yeah,
we had this glass door on it, and the cat just comes running through, and all of a sudden you hear bam, and the cat just like looks all disoriented and like, what the heck was that? And then you realize she ran into the glass door that she didn't see. And since then, she drinks out of the toilet, she drinks out of the shower, and this cat is just bizarre. But she's also really old.
So, all cats are bizarre.
Yeah.
That is true.
Okay. All right, getting back onto baseball terms now. I think...
Speaking of bizarre things, like...
Yeah.
This just real quickly. I was reading the Journal Sentinel online the other day, and I found this article by Tom Hargecourt, who is our official Brewers columnist. And he wrote an article after Greinke signed his blockbuster deal with the Dodgers. You didn't think we'd be able to go a whole show without talking about Greinke, did you?
Oh, no, we have to throw him here somewhere.
Exactly. So he reached his 6-year, $147 million contract. And then Tom Hargecourt writes this article, and the article is titled "Brewers Top Talent Use Club as Stepping Stone," which on its face kind of makes sense when you think about the deal that Prince Fielder got, and you think about the deal that Greinke got, and you think about the deal that CC Sabathia got, and the deal that Francisco Cordero got.
Yeah.
And the way the article is worded, it says, you know, and it talks about Carlos Lee and all these people, and it basically makes the case that the Brewers aren't a team for elite talent. The Brewers are a team used to ship elite talent to other places. And I don't really think I agree with that, personally, because you look at, like, Prince Fielder, who was here for 7 years before he took that deal with the Tigers, and there's no way anyone's going to pass up a 200-plus million dollar contract. You look at it, we signed Zach Greinke in a trade, and then he was going to free agency. We gave him a qualifying offer that was 5 years at $100 million, and he gets 6 years at 147 with the Dodgers, who we traded away for prospects anyways. It doesn't seem like there's anything. I think Harjacourt is just a little bit off base here, because to me it seems like just the business of baseball run through a perfect example of a small market team.
Yeah, because you can't really say that, you know, elite players don't play in Milwaukee, because what about Ryan Braun? What about Yovani Gallardo? And what about us getting, you know, Aramis Ramirez? I mean,
right.
You know, those may be stretches. Well, maybe not Ryan Braun. But, you know, saying Yovani Gallardo and Aramis Ramirez are elite at their position might be stretches, but they're very, very good.
And you know how much I hate the term elite anyway.
Oh, yeah. It's such a bogus term. I mean, you hear it in football, baseball, basketball. Like, it just, it's overabused, overused, and it makes no sense half the time. I think elite is such a term, is a term that just...
If you're a
So what?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't really agree with that, because we're not a team that can't afford to get people. I mean, if we couldn't afford people, we wouldn't have made a qualifying offer to Greinke. I mean, simple as that.
And we made a qualifying offer to. We didn't make an offer to Prince Fielder, if I remember correctly. Because there was just no way we were going to compete with any of the other teams at that point. And you look at, you know, like Francisco Cordero signed for only a couple, like $3 or $4 million more than he had in Milwaukee, to go to the Reds. And then Carlos Lee got in a trade, and then we gave him up, and he turned out to do not so great. Towards the end of his monster deal in Houston, which ruined the Astros for years to come, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Just want to throw this in here real quick. I just saw this on Twitter.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The Red Sox are actually now in serious talks with Dempster. I don't know how far this is going to go. There's been no deal yet. He could still sign somewhere else. But that has just happened, which I think is really interesting, considering how I just mentioned, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes ago, how he denied an offer from them. So,
right.
And plus, it was just on MLB Trade Rumors earlier today, how the Red Sox are already content with what they have, and guys like Buchholz, Lester, they had an entire list. Basically, their starting rotation, DuBront, Lackey, and Franklin Morales. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where that's going or anything, but I just happened to see that, and I think it's pretty interesting. Ken Rosenthal is reporting it, stuff like that. So when Ken Rosenthal reports it, you know it's serious.
Right. It is on MLB Trade Rumors, I see. And it looks like the Brewers are still involved in the periphery of that. But it looks like most Brewers fans are pretty content with just offering the 2-year deal. But I think it goes back to that whole discussion we were talking about before, and in linking into this article we were just discussing, that I think the Brewers are just gun shy about in terms of offering years on contracts. I think the money is usually right where you would expect it to be. I don't think the Brewers are ever in the habit of really overpaying for people, except maybe Eric Gagne and Jeff Suppan, but. And to some degree, maybe Randy Wolf, you can make that. But I think they're just gun shy about the length of time that they're offering. And when you get bitten by, you know, a deal like Randy Wolf's or a deal like Jeff Supon's, you have a tendency to get gun-shy, especially when you're a small market team. But I think the discussion about payroll and the discussion about length of contract is really akin to fighting symptoms instead of fighting the disease. You know, maybe we're not looking for the right type of player to enter into our system.
Yeah, because guys like that, you know, yeah, sure they want the money, but they also want the job security as well.
Right.
And that's something the Brewers, like you said, are very gun-shy about. They're not willing to go out and give these guys 3, 4, 5 years. Which is why I thought it was so odd, like when they brought up the Hamilton rumors, which I don't think still have died down yet, that the Brewers are going to offer him a multi-year deal, which I thought was just so bizarre because, A, he's not a pitcher.
And right.
And B, multi-year deals on the Brewers just don't mix all that well. And the only reason that they have signed one recently was because it was Ryan Braun. And it's,
yeah.
I mean, duh, that's why. But, I mean, we all can point the fingers at Doug Melvin and go, well, you screwed up here, you did this. But you also have to realize, like you said, the Brewers don't have the money that the Dodgers and the Yankees and the Phillies and the Red Sox have. They are a small market team that only has so much to do with. And, you know, if they invest money into one player, it's probably going to be that one player in it. So that's why they're being a little bit more cautious about it. But I think in a sense, this caution is also hurting them a little bit because Dempster is a guy the Brewers were thought to easily have had before we even got into the winter meetings, and he's still not with the team yet. So to a degree, it hurts the Brewers, but for the most part, I understand exactly what Doug Mulvin's doing, and I don't think he should get as much crap as he is.
Yeah, I think for the most part, I think Doug Mulvin's been pretty far-seeing, pretty shrewd, and has done a fairly good job in building this team. Again, I think some of the problems come from where the market's moving in terms of free agent players. And I think a lot of it has come from, again, I don't know if they're looking in the right places, if they're looking for the right level of talent and the right skill sets. You know, and it's one thing to go chasing after all the big names, which isn't really in the Brewers' MO, because we just don't have the money to do that. But I think there are areas you can look at in a team or in a player that would be far more effective than, you know, just chasing after big names or just who we can afford.
Yeah, because the Brewers, they don't have a lot of the homegrown talent that the other teams have, because we have a lot of unproven talent. So there's not a lot we can work with there in trading-wise, and there's not a whole lot we can work with in a free agent market when there's guys who are either A, superstars,
mm-hmm.
or B, guys who aren't any better than what we would probably be getting if we rushed a minor leaguer up here.
Right.
There's really no clear-cut pitcher in there that say, wow, you know, we should go after him. There was, I want to say, maybe in Dan Heron, but he's gone. You know, Anibal Sanchez is still out there, but he's way too expensive. He wants $90 million for 6 years. No way. He's good, but he's not $90 million good. You know,
there was, I thought, a great fit in Brandon McCarthy as well. We let kind of slip through our fingers there. Now, how much of a fit he would have been in reality, it's hard to say. But on paper, I think certainly he fit really well. And I think the best move that the team did so far was Burke Badenhop.
Yeah, because reconstructing that bullpen, it's just as uncertain as reconstructing the starting rotation. Yeah, you have, you know, Axford and Henderson. And in the rotation, you have Yovani Gallardo. Beyond that, it's just this black hole. There's nobody there. And guys like Burke Badenhop fill that role. You know, they go in there, that middle relief, and they help that. Beyond that, you also have Brandon Kinstler, who's probably in there as well.
Right.
But honestly, you're kidding yourself if you're saying that you're content with what we have, because the Brewers don't have enough. You know, if the Brewers get at least one or two more players, whether it be Dempster or somebody else, I would expect to see them probably first in the Central. I think they could overtake the Reds and the Cardinals because we already know they have the offense to do it. If they get that solid pitching, if we had at least 10 games this season where we had solid outings by relievers, we right. wouldn't even be in the position we were in. So you have to realize what the problem is, and they have, and that's what they're doing with signing these, you know, guys that you don't hear much about. They don't have to go out and get the big names. You know, I thought Ryan Madsen would be a nice fit, but he wants to be a closer in some places, so okay. Latroy Hawkins is still out there. Saito is still out there, so maybe we can bring back some ex-Brewers. Who knows?
Right.
I don't think the Brewers' rotation is really that much of a problem if they were to sign somebody else. If they sign somebody else, then I think the rotation is fine. I think the bullpen's where the most concern needs to be, though.
Yeah, it's... Again, what we're talking about right now is all speculation.
Yeah.
And it's a very slow offseason for the Brewers, and... again, financially, it makes sense why we're not making a lot of moves. So it's frustrating for fans like us. But, you know, I think I like the Brewers team where they're at right now. I think, I just think that, you know, we're still a couple pieces away.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the Brewers were to get those pieces, whatever they may be, they are literally just one to two steps away from being actual serious contenders year in, year out. Now whether or not, you know, Melvin's willing to go forward with that to a degree that it might break the barrier of signing guys for multi-year deals, we don't know. But I think, in a sense, you have to take that risk again. Maybe not to the degree you took it with guys like Jeff Suppan and David Riske and Randy Wolf, but to a degree where you have guys that you can fall back on if Plan A doesn't work out. And that's what the Brewers have. That's what they had last year when, you know, Narvison got hurt, when Markham got hurt, when Greinke was traded. We had those backup options, and they did fairly well for the most part.
Yeah, I would agree with that, certainly. It's, you know, it's always a risk signing multi-year deals, and I can understand it. But at the same time, I mean, if you don't take risks in this game, you're not really getting anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, baseball is, it's such a funny thing of life, because it's so uncertain. I mean, who would have thought, going into this season, a guy like R.A. Dickey would win the Cy Young.
Right.
I mean, there are so many things, and nothing to discredit R.A. Dickey. I mean, that's amazing. But, I mean, that's a good example of not knowing what you're going to get from what you have. So, who knows? I mean, what if the Brewers get that out of Willy Peralta next year, or Mike Fiers, or Estrada? I mean, we already know what we can get out of Gallardo. But we don't know what we can get out of the other three or four guys that can fill this rotation, because they haven't pitched for an entire year in the big leagues. They haven't started for an entire year. So maybe you do sign a guy like Dempster who can provide the veteran presence and that successful presence at Miller Park and attribute it to the guys who haven't pitched up here that long and, you know, show them the ropes a little bit, show them what they're doing wrong. You know, tell them, okay, you do this in this certain situation, just act cool in this one. But, you know, like we said, half of this is all speculation, so we have no idea what the Brewers could be doing right now.
Yeah, so we definitely at this point need to keep our ears to the ground. I think it's safe to assume that we're going to see a much younger team in 2013, a much less experienced team, but I don't think it'll work out that negatively for the Brewers. You have guys in Willy Peralta that are ready to go. You have guys in Mike Fiers that now have experience under their belt. There's the argument that maybe, you know, opposing batters have figured out Mike Fiers. But I think he would probably have learned enough about himself and the way that he pitches and the way you need to manage a major league game as a pitcher. So I don't have the same level of concern about fires. And then you have guys like Tyler Thornburg, and the relief corps is probably one to two pieces away from being very serious, obviously. You have Brandon Kinsler, you have Burke Badenhop, you have Jim Henderson, and you have John Axford is essentially your relief corps right now. So definitely need more pieces there. But remember, a lot is going to change also in spring training when you have guys that did really well in the Arizona Fall League, and you have a few people ready to go in, you know, Double A and Triple A to try to make something happen up into the big leagues. So for now, I think the Brewers' motto is just hurry up and wait.
Yeah, there's really not much more you can do with it because, yeah, if you don't take the road that says, okay, let's sign this guy, then that you're saying, okay, let's take the road and let's wait for these guys to, you know, come up into these roles. You have guys like Jimmy Nelson, you have Ariel Pena, Johnny Helwig, Nick Bucci, guys that, I think I'm saying that right. But
yeah.
You have, at least in my opinion, these four who, looking at 2014, 2015, will be huge impact guys somewhere in the rotation or the bullpen. And I think those are four guys also that you have to keep some of a lock on. If you make any trades, these four can't be a part of it. They've done really well, not only in the minors, but some of them did really well in the Fall League. The Brewers, offensively and defensively and pitching-wise, did well. You know, the representatives did well in the Fall League. You know, but guys like Josh Prince and Brock Kleygaard, that's such a hard name to say. But
it is.
You know, the Brewers have a future with these younger players, and these younger players do show a lot of promise. So maybe it's just one more year of uncertainty, and then we know what we can work with. The year of uncertainty may end with us in the World Series and winning it. The era may end in heartbreak. We don't know. But if it's the waiting game the Brewers want to play, then that's fine. You know, your offense is fine where it is. Your pitching, for the most part, is okay, but you don't have that definitive oomph in it. You don't have that definitive punch, that wallop, that, you know.
Right.
You don't have that yet, and maybe you get that with these guys you bring up.
It's possible, and it looks like the Brewers are willing to take that chance right now. It looks like that, at some point these guys do have to get, they do have to get their feet wet in the major leagues. And they do need a serious shot. And for the last couple years, I mean really since Giovanni Gallardo came up, there haven't been a whole lot of rookies that have gotten that shot. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's kind of exciting. As a fan, you have to be a little bit excited to see it. I mean, obviously you're worried because we don't have any big names. We don't have any real proven winners coming into this pitching staff outside of Gallardo, obviously. But, I mean, it's a real chance for this team to show what it's made of and for these young guys to show what they can do in the big leagues. And so, on that aspect, I think, if not cautiously optimistic, you have to be a little bit excited.
Yeah, because the uncertainty, while it may have its certain risks, is also fun. Because you don't know what you're going to get out of them. Who would have thought for the month or two that Mike Fiers was pitching, you know, lights out, that he would have done that? I mean, he almost threw a perfect game. So, I mean, who would have expected that to happen?
Right.
But in the same regards, who would have expected him to blow up like he did? So that is the risk you run. But, you know, it's fun not knowing what you're going to get from guys because then you know what to work with. Then you know, okay, we can mold this player into this certain role or we can spot start him and things like that. And in a sense, it gives you, you know, a look into what you can work with the future. So,
right.
Yeah, I think guys like Johnny Helwig and Jimmy Nelson in particular, who will probably end up being starters someday. You know, who knows how they'll do. Maybe they'll work in the bullpen at first and then go to starting. Or maybe they'll just throw them right into the starting role. Who knows?
Right.
But The one thing I do want to talk about, not really Brewers related, but still baseball related, is you know, with the winter meetings and with everything that's happened up until this point, the Los Angeles Dodgers have really set this precedent for 2013. They have really done something that has not been done in baseball for the longest time, at least all in one season. and it's ripples affect not only the NL West, but all of baseball, in a sense that you look at some of the contracts that they're offering, like Greinke's.
Right.
And like other players they've signed. This influences other free agents that, hey, if the Dodgers can offer this, why can't you? And, you know, we always go through this every year. There's always this team that on paper should be in the World Series. A couple years ago it was the Red Sox. This, you know, last year it was the Marlins. This year it could be the Blue Jays and the Dodgers. Which is so ironic because I was playing MLB 2K12 the other day.
Right.
And this is without any roster changes. So, you know, the Blue Jays were still the same before their mega trade, and the Dodgers were still the same.
Right.
And I simulated a season, and the World Series was Dodgers versus Blue Jays, with the Dodgers winning in four. So who knows about that, but, you know, on theory, yeah, the Dodgers have one of the greatest teams right now. But you look at the rotation, Kershaw, Greinke, Billingsley, Ryu, this Korean pitcher they just got.
Yeah.
It's just, which a lot of people were saying he looks like the guy from that Gangnam Style video, but you know, the Dodgers are going to have some concerns though beyond this season. Yeah, you just got Greinke for 6 years, but you know who also wants some money when they're a free agent? Clayton Kershaw.
Right.
And Kershaw is not going to come cheap. So, you know, we've seen it before, and these teams fall on their face. If there is a team, and let's just go with the Blue Jays and Dodgers right now, which team is more likely to fall on their face, the Blue Jays or the Dodgers?
Probably the Blue Jays.
Really?
Yeah, well, those guys didn't work together very well in Miami.
Yeah, and they are in a tougher division.
They'll work together better in Toronto.
That's true, because, you know, not only chemistry plays a huge part of it, but the division that they're in plays a huge part of it, because now you literally, in the AL East, all five teams can contend.
Right.
Whereas in the NL West, you have the Giants and Dodgers. Maybe the Diamondbacks, you know, getting Brandon McCarthy and all that, that's the rotation, and having that trade that they just had with the Indians. But then you have the Padres and the Rockies, who, you know, are just kind of dead at this point. So, you know, maybe it's tougher for the Blue Jays because of the division they're in, but also it's tough because, like you said, these guys don't have that great of a team chemistry. But in the same sense, they didn't really need that before, because you look at their team last year, and this is a team that still right. didn't do that bad. They were four games under 500. But this was without Jose Bautista, though. He was not in the lineup. He was injured. This is still a team with Colby Rasmus, with Rajay Davis, with Brett Laurie, with J.P. Arencibia. This is a team that has a lot of offense. Pitching-wise, you know, Ricky Romero had a very kind of year. Brandon Morrow's really turned it around. Aaron Laffey's done sort of well. So this is a team that already had talent, and then you add guys like Josh Johnson and Jose Reyes and Mark Burley. You know, then it becomes a team that really kind of, regardless of team chemistry, still can do really well. But like we said, in theory, on paper, things like that. I don't know. I think the Blue Jays were already good enough, but this extra push would definitely help them be a lot better than they were. Whereas the Dodgers were just like, okay, I'm going to handpick this guy and this guy and this guy and take the Red Sox. And I don't know. I feel like the Dodgers are going to fall on their face just because of the clashing personalities you get there. You already had you from that team, you get Adrian Gonzalez, Carl Crawford, Josh Beckett, all from Boston, who all three of them, A, did not get along with Bobby Valentine, and B,
right.
were just not really good teammates with each other. So, I don't know. I'm not trying to say this to, you know, argue against you. I'm just saying I think that you buy a collection of talent, whereas you trade for it in what you already had. I think the team that buys it is going to fall flat on their face. We saw it with Boston, you know, a couple of years ago. We saw it with Miami just last year. So
that's true, and we did see it with the Angels as well. I mean, I think the caveat to this whole discussion is just that you can acquire all the talent you want, but that doesn't necessarily breed success. That's an organizational thing that maybe the Dodgers are ready for with the new ownership, with you know, everything going on there. Maybe the Blue Jays are ready for it. It's hard to say. It's one of those things where we look at them now and we say, wow, these guys are going to be crazy good. But then, I mean, that's why we have 162 game seasons.
And why sometimes it literally comes down to that last 162 games to, you know, prove who wins this division, who gets in the wild card. And that's what's just so fun about this sport.
Right.
You know, in looking at 2012, who would have thought Baltimore would be in the playoffs? Who would have thought Washington would have won the East? You know, not really soundly, but you take Atlanta out of that, and yeah, they won it pretty soundly.
Yeah. No, and I mean that's what I'm talking about. You look at like Buck Showalter and the way that he commands that team as a manager, and you know, when you really look at that, it's not hard to understand that yeah, that's why they did it. You know, because they have a guy pushing them and working with them like Buck Showalter. So I mean, it can happen to anybody.
Yeah, it's just the way this game plays out in a sense, you know, it's just one team, they have that chemistry, like Tampa Bay, for example, with Joe Maddon, mm-hmm. he has his players, you know, they always do certain themes, like 50s themes or 60s themes or movie themes right. whenever they go on plane flights to another city, and maybe that livens up the club, but, you know, teams like Baltimore, teams like Tampa Bay, teams like Oakland, and the AL, and then you have teams in the National League, like Washington, and Milwaukee, and San Francisco, who have just really kind of stepped into their own, more so Washington than anybody, because we already knew Washington had a really good rotation, and they're just kind of strengthening the point now with adding Dan Heron, and the fact mm-hmm. that now they have Jason Worth, Michael Morse, guys like that batting with them.
Right.
So, you know, maybe we're ushering in a new age of baseball to where it's not going to be, you know, Philly, Boston, New York, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's going to be these teams that, you know, for the most part were mocked and laughed upon because they were always the bottom dwellers of that division.
Everyone gets their day, that's for sure.
Yeah. Miami, I'm not sure they'll ever get their day, to be quite honest.
Oh, they've already had theirs. They have two World Series.
Yeah.
They've won two World Series. Their time's passed.
Yeah, I think for the next few years, they're going to be the punching bag of the National League easily. Houston, I don't really know what to say. They're getting thrown into a very tough division now with Seattle actually doing pretty well last year.
Right.
So, I don't know. I just, baseball plays out in funny ways, and 2013 is going to be a very interesting year. After, you know, finally where we see Josh Hamilton land, where he's going to go, where, you know, Ryan Dempster will go, where Anibal Sanchez will go, when these teams finally solidify up, and then we'll see who the Brewers finally get for relief, who the Brewers have decided is going to be a starter. You know, and that brings a lot of questions, you know, that we were just talking about earlier. You look at guys in the fall league, you look at guys at spring training, and then we'll get more of an idea of what's going to go on, because like we talked about in previous shows, it's just not the Brewers that affect themselves. It's just not, you know, another team that affects themselves. It's the teams around them that affect them. and the Reds and Cardinals haven't really done anything. Nobody in the NL Central has really done anything. So the Brewers could be that first to strike.
Right. It could happen. The Reds have been quietly building up. I think, again, on paper, the Reds are the team to beat in the Central, again. But it's hard to say at this point. And, again, if you're a Brewers fan, it might be frustrating for you at this point. It's no doubt frustrating for us, having this complete lack of material. But, you know, there are reasons to be excited. There are still things to look forward to, and all in all, I think, you know, we're 109 days away from opening day. So certainly don't give up just because the Brewers haven't done any serious shopping yet, because we have fuel in the tank to make a run at this division the way we are right now.
Only 109 days away.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I wish it was like 20. It's just so painful to see baseball still far away, you know. But hey, the World Baseball Classic starts up, and pitchers and catchers.
It's a longer spring training.
Yeah, pitchers and catchers report in what, like 10 weeks, maybe 9 weeks. So,
yeah, hey, we're almost there.
Almost. This is probably going to be our last show of the year. For you listeners out there, we might try to do something on the 26th, but, you know, life doesn't like to be really nice to us.
Right.
So, it's been an incredible year, I say.
I would say so. I think it's been our first season with the Reviewing the Brew podcast. I think it went really well. We'll try in the new year. Our new year resolution will be to... not go off script as much.
And talk about cats running into entertainment centers.
Right, exactly.
And
by the way, happy Martin Maldonado Day to everyone out there.
And Aaron Rodgers.
Right, depending on where your allegiance lies. Do not say happy Tom Brady Day, though.
No, we will probably have to kick you.
Right.
Or worse, break your leg like Brady's was broken. We don't want to have to do that. We don't want to have to resort to physical violence in that way. And if you mention any Cardinals, so God help you.
Exactly.
But I would just like to thank FanSided. I'd like to thank Lou Olson, Brad White, Kurt Hoag. I'd like to thank you, Colin, for, you know, putting up with the podcast and, you know, everybody who helped get our name out there, who helped, you know, support us, who helped retweet us, things like that. It means a lot to us, you know, because this is just an idea we came up with on a whim, and it's worked out since April, and it's now December.
Right. No, it's been a very fun run, and we definitely look forward to doing it again in 2013.
Yeah, so if we can't get into our next show on the 26th, our next show will be next year if the world doesn't end in, you know, 9 days. if that doesn't happen, our next show will be January 9th, and we'll still be doing the two-a-month thing, and then once April hits, or maybe even March, if we're feeling lucky for it, we'll go back to the one, you know, weekly show. But, you know, maybe expect some new changes next year. Maybe we'll do something fancy. Who knows? I mean, maybe we'll have a theme song. I don't know.
More guests.
Yes.
Probably the same level of professionalism.
Hey, we do what we can, so.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, it's been incredible. Thank you for listening, and if you don't hear from us in 2 weeks, you know, have a great holiday, and see you next year.
We'll see you on the other side, guys.